On May the 13th, Henry III and his courtiers did succeed in slipping out of the capital in great embarrassment, and the administration of the city was now taken over by the 16. The mayor, the aldermen, and other officers of the city militia were replaced by loyal merchants and loyal magistrates. The 16 was now in control. Henry III, now exiled from his own capital, accepted at this point nearly all of the League's demands. He reaffirmed the Treaty of Nemours from 1585. He recognized the aging Cardinal de Bourbon as his heir presumptive. He bestowed new governorships upon the members of the House of Guise. And finally, he appointed the Duke of Guise as Lieutenant General of the kingdom. But it was really all only a sham. Henry was only playing for time. On the 23rd of December, 1588, the Duke of Guise was lured on false pretenses into the chambers of the king, and he was hacked to death. Guise himself was a powerful man and tried to struggle his way out, but he was struck down by a large crowd of people. And the next day, the Cardinal of Lorraine was murdered, and other prominent members of the Catholic League and members of the Guise family were thrown into prison. Paris exploded into fury. The popular street preachers cried out for vengeance against the new Herod, and on the 7th of January, 1589, the Sorbonne, the theology faculty of the University of Paris, declared Henry III formally deposed and released all Frenchmen from their obligation to him. The central ideological claim of the Catholic League was that no Protestant could inherit the throne, and that Catholic succession was a fundamental, inviolable law of the French Constitution. This position was grounded in a very radical argument for popular sovereignty, an argument most forcibly stated by the Parisian parish priest or curé, a man by the name of Jean Boucher. Boucher wrote a massive treatise, it's also an important treatise, called The Just Deposition of Henry III, which he published in 1589. And in this treatise, Boucher insisted that the state is merely a human institution. It is created by people for their own convenience, and that sovereignty is transferred by the king to the people in a contract overseen by God. Moreover, in order to ensure observance of the terms, the people retain the power over the king. Boucher would go even further in a later treatise which he wrote against Henry of Navarre, where he would declare that the power to bind and unbind rests in the people and the estates, who are the guardians of sovereignty and the judges of scepters and kingdoms, since they are the font and origin of them. Those who have created kings, not by necessity or constraint, but by their own free will, have also the right to choose from several varieties of government that which is most useful to them. Even a private individual, Boucher argued, has the right of striking down a king who had been declared a tyrant and deposed by one of the institutions of the nation or by the Pope. Boucher's ideas would be expanded by another author whose true identity remains unknown because he wrote under the pseudonym Guillaume Roséus, but he published a tract entitled The Just Authority of a Christian Commonwealth Over Impious and Heretical Kings in the year 1590. And in this tract, Roséus argued that none of the forms of government, monarchy, aristocracy, or democracy, had any intrinsic superiority to the others. And this represents a radical rejection of European political theory going all the way back to Aristotle, where it was always assumed that these forms of government existed, but that democracy was the one you had to worry most about. Indeed, on the contrary, Roséus argued, monarchy was the most suspect form of government, since it was closest to tyranny. Roséus argued that the people are superior to the king and retain the right to depose him at will, and that any member of the Commonwealth, any individual, might strike down a tyrant. It's important to see here that the theorists of the Catholic League went far beyond the ideas of even the most radical Huguenots in suggesting that if the king were a tyrant, any single member of the Commonwealth could strike him down and kill him. So much, then, for the ideology of the League. I'd like to now turn to its actual practical politics. The assassination of the Duke of Guise and of the Cardinal of Guise was an open declaration of war against the Catholic League. Upon their deaths, political leadership passed to their brother, the Duke of Mayenne. But nevertheless, it was not really Mayenne, but rather the Paris 16, who took practical command of the situation. The Paris 16 devised a general council to coordinate all of the League's political activities. In the early weeks of 1589, nearly all of the major Catholic cities in France associated themselves with the radicals in Paris. Lyon alone, among the Catholic cities of France, held out for the king. In the provinces, the activities of the Catholic League were coordinated by provincial councils, which represented a new and federal concept of government, and interestingly enough, bear a striking resemblance to the Huguenot United Provinces of the Midi established between 1573 and 1574.